Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tortoise. Hi, it's Claudia here, and you're listening to the Slow Newscast from Tortoise.
I'm always a troublemaker. I'm always. I mean, I love trouble. I love the intensity of trouble. That's a great fun.
Jimmy Lai is a self-proclaimed troublemaker, a rebel. His background as a successful businessman in Hong Kong allowed him to start a newspaper. Like his personality, it was at times brash, and it certainly caused trouble.
I got bombs thrown into my house. I got people came here, ransacked my computer, and I got people threatening me. I got this and that, but I'm safe. I'm happy.
For 25 years, Apple Daily, Jimmy Lai's newspaper, spoke as freely as it could. It thrived against all pressures. But the law and the might of the Chinese state eventually brought it to heel. Jimmy Lai was seen by many as a Hong Kong success story, a dreamer who arrived as a stowaway on a fishing boat and became one of its richest, most powerful men. But trouble has followed him. And his voice, once so loud and bold in Hong Kong's media, has, in recent years, been silenced. Because his story is entwined with the story of Hong Kong, now cast in the shadow of Beijing. So what does the silencing of Jimmy Lai, the person, tell us about Hong Kong, the city, and the freedoms it no longer enjoys? And what does the way he's been treated tell us about what the British government does and doesn't do for its citizens overseas? My colleagues Imi Harper and Xavier Greenwood have been talking to those who best know Jimmy Lai and Hong Kong. His friends, family, former colleagues, and his critics too. It's a story that starts at dawn on the 10th of August 2020. A fateful day in the life of Jimmy Lai and the history of Hong Kong.
Jimmy Lai crossed the line.
It's like when I found out that my grandfather was sick when I was younger. It was one of those feelings where you hope for the best, but you also expect the worst. They came at 5 a.m. to arrest my father.
Jimmy Lai was led out of the gates of his home by police. He was faced with a scrum of media cameras. He wore a suit, as if he was ready for a normal day in the office. Bundled into an unmarked van, that's where the police took him.
They handcuffed him, in, which they hadn't done before, and perp walked him through the newsroom.
200 police officers raided the Apple Daily newsroom, sifting through papers on reporters' desks, seizing more than 30 boxes of documents. By the time Jimmy Lai arrived, his face covered with a blue COVID mask, police tape was everywhere. As he was frog-marched past rows of desks and past his colleagues, officers held the tape up for him. Apple Daily was no longer just a newsroom. It was a crime scene.
I was watching it online because our colleagues at Apple Daily, they just take out the cell phones and start streaming live of the raid. It was very surreal.
A group of reporters hurried behind Jimmy Lai. When one journalist asked if he'd been told this would happen, he laughed. No, he replied. As Jimmy Lai got back into the van, a reporter asked him another question. Do you know where you're going? Mong Kok Police Station, he replied.
I think it's quite telling of who Dad is, because afterwards they also brought him to his boat. The cops asking him, then what is under the boat? You know, sort of like, it's almost like he was sort of this this huge criminal that had all these secrets or whatnot. And that just says the fucking engine.
40 hours later, Jimmy Lai was released. He headed straight back into the office, where he was given a bunch of flowers and a hero's welcome.
Jimmy, after he had the bell and he went back to the office, and he talked to the colleagues. He said, if you choose to leave, no one would blame you.
Many chose to stay. Apple Daily and Jimmy Lai were in no mood to keep silent. The day after Jimmy Lai's arrest, the newspaper carried a picture of their owner on the front page with a headline in big red letters. Apple Daily will keep fighting. Normally, Apple Daily printed 70,000 copies of its paper. That day, the run was 550,000. Without skipping a beat, Jimmy Lai was back in the public eye, doing his weekly live stream.
We had 200,000 people watching. He just kind of doubled down.
And talking about his arrest with foreign media, like the German broadcaster Deutsche Welle.
I can't be scared. If I'm scared, I won't be able to do anything or say anything. That's why I accept your interview without any doubt.
And the BBC.
I got everything I have because of this place. You know, a wonderful family. You know, they're very supportive. If this is the payback time, this is my redemption.
But Jimmy Lai's freedom was short-lived. By the end of 2020, he was back in jail.
He messaged people and just said, okay, it's finished, it's over. And so, yeah, he definitely knew, you know, by the end that, you know, he was going to be in there for a long time.
Jimmy Lai's been behind bars ever since, kept in solitary confinement in Stanley Prison, a maximum security jail in Hong Kong built during the British Empire. For more than 1,000 days, the 76-year-old has been imprisoned for fraud and unauthorised assembly, and now he faces even more serious charges that he endangered China's national security and conspired to collude with foreign forces. He pleads his innocence, but these denials mean little. He's been charged with what he needs to be charged with, so that Hong Kong and Beijing can make an example of him. For the last 4 months, Jimmy Lai has been on trial.
I think the message is very clear. The message is, keep silent or you'll be next. That's the message.
If you went to Beijing and you walked around and you just talked to people, contrary to popular belief, people will tell you their opinions about anything. You ask them about Jimmy Lai, he's a traitor. He should be hung.
The odds are stacked against him. He's a defendant in a court which has a 100% conviction rate. People have been named as co-conspirators who say they've never met him. And a Washington Post investigation alleges that one of the witnesses against Jimmy Lai was mistreated in custody. Some of those in the same detention centre could hear screams from the cell. Jimmy Lai could have avoided this. He could have left Hong Kong. He could have moved to the UK, where he's a citizen. But he didn't.
I think he sort of knew what his fate would be, but despite knowing that, chose to accept it and stay.
He said, I would rather be hanging dead from a lamppost in central Hong Kong than give the communists the satisfaction of saying that I had run away.
So why did Jimmy Lai stay?
This is just living my life peacefully. But if I'm in jail, I'm living my life meaningfully.
To answer that, I've got to tell you a story not just about Jimmy Lai, but about Beijing. It's the story of a superpower that's willing to silence its critics, wherever they are in the world.
We were followed and subjected to very intimidatory surveillance in Geneva at the United Nations. I've had threats to my kids, I've had threats to my husband.
A superpower that believes it's doing the right thing.
You profess to be a democracy. Hong Kong and China never make that professions. They run along authoritarian government logic and see group security and safety and prosperity as a priority. I don't see why what's happening in Hong Kong is your concern any more than what's happening in London is my concern.
And it's the story of another country, Britain, that doesn't stand up for its own citizens.
It has been a matter of very serious regret to me and the rest of the international legal team and to Sebastian Lai, Jimmy Lai's son, that the UK let him down so badly.
He was incredibly free, as in like he was incredibly a liberal. He'd sort of let us do the things that we would want to do.
This is Sebastian Lai. He's 29 and one of Jimmy Lai's children.
I remember once, actually, he caught me smoking. A long time ago, I don't smoke anymore. He just sort of nudged me. He's like, look, son, you could continue doing this if you want, but nobody could help you with the consequences of that.
Sebastian Lai lives in Taiwan now. It's too dangerous for him to go back to Hong Kong. He's not seen his father in more than 3 years. He doesn't know if he'll see him again.
I had a very good childhood. One thing that my father did, looking back very well, was that he never brought it home. So I was asked once whether I have all these strong views about people needing democracy and whatnot, because he would always talk about it at home, but that was never the case. I think he was always one of those people who knew that he was doing the right thing and didn't necessarily feel the need to talk about it in every chance that he got with his family. Earliest memory of my father is, the earliest one I have actually, is I think on my second or third birthday. And they had bought this radish cake. They had made this radish cake for all the guests. And I tried them and tried it for the first time. And I just remember blocking my father from eating it because I loved it so much. And for some reason, that's my first memory of my father as a very young child.
Sebastian Lai's first memory of his father relates to food. And there's a curious symmetry there, because that's where Jimmy Lai's story begins. Not with a radish cake, but a chocolate bar.
He grew up in very difficult circumstances. The communists took power a year after he was born, 10 months after he was born, and the family went from wealth to very difficult circumstances. And he became a street hustler and eventually was a porter at the Canton, the Guangzhou train station, and met a number of Hong Kongers. A guy gave him a bar of chocolate as a partial tip.
One day, a guy gave me, a kind of chocolate, and I tasted it. I said, what's this, the chocolate? Where's from? Hong Kong. I said, Hong Kong must be heaven.
Jimmy ate the chocolate and was like, wow, this is amazing. Where are you from? Guy said, Hong Kong. He said, I got to go to Hong Kong. The place must be paradise.
Mark Clifford is president of the Committee for Freedom in Hong Kong, which works to free political prisoners. He's an old friend and colleague of Jimmy Lai's.
At the age of 12, as an illegal immigrant, went through Macau and smuggled himself in on a fishing boat, rocked up at his aunt and uncle's shack, and it was a shack that was so small he couldn't stay there. He spent his first night sleeping on the floor or on a table in a factory where he started working. So he went from being a child laborer living in a factory to, within, I guess, about a little more than 12 or 13 years later, he owned a factory. And that factory, within a short period of time, became one of the largest sweater manufacturers in Hong Kong, if not in Asia. Then started a retail company, and it was the precursor, really the beginning of fast fashion. The founder of Uniqlo, the Japanese multi-billionaire Tadashi Inai, came down to study with Jimmy.
By the time he was 30, Jimmy Lai was already a successful businessman. He could have had an easy life, but then something happened that changed everything.
The People's Liberation Army, blocked by the people. The troops cannot move to clear Tiananmen Square.
Student protests in Tiananmen Square, in the centre of Beijing. Jimmy Lai received a call asking him to send 5,000 t-shirts in support of the students. He watched as things escalated from non-violent protests into a massacre.
There was confusion and despair among those who could hardly credit that their own army was firing wildly.
In a few minutes, a city that had been entirely peaceful was being turned not into a battle zone, but a killing ground.
There was not one voice on the streets which did not express despair and rage. Tell the world, they said to us.
You know, and that just set his life in a different direction. He decided he'd start a magazine instead of a fast food chain, and believed that first through his magazine, which he'd already started in 1990, and then more powerfully through a daily newspaper, he could bring a sense of transparency and accountability first to the Hong Kong government and eventually to China. The irony that he's on trial for being anti-China is so painful. This guy is so pro-China. He believed in China so much. By the time I met him in 1993, he'd moved to this gorgeous villa overlooking the Hong Kong Harbor, and he cooked lunch for me. And I can tell you, I've met a lot of CEOs in my life, and I've never had one cook lunch for me.
In the hills above Hong Kong, Jimmy Lai was building a reputation as a wealthy businessman who was belligerent and eccentric in equal parts. One minute, he was in the news for keeping a black bear in his back garden. The next, he was making pointed criticisms of China.
In 1994, he wrote a piece attacking the premier Li Peng, who was regarded by many people as the butcher of Beijing, the one who really gave the orders for the attack.
That's the Tiananmen Square attack.
I was very mad, and I wrote a very nasty and rude open letter to him. And in the letter, I call him the son of the turtle egg. Yeah, which is very rude. I don't want to translate it.
And that's what Jimmy Lai called China's second highest ranking official.
He, in the end, was forced to sell his clothing chain because the Chinese started closing the branches of the clothing chain. He realized very early on what the Chinese state, what the Communist Party was capable of in terms of punishing anyone, especially a business person, who dared speak out.
Perhaps at that stage, most people would think enough is enough. But Jimmy Lai has said it himself. He's a born rebel. So on a summer's day in 1995, he launched a newspaper.
From day one, Apple was a very aggressive newspaper. It was technically a broadsheet, it was a big newspaper, but it had beautiful color printing and it had really aggressive coverage, coverage of crime, coverage of starlets, coverage of scandalous affairs. I mean, it was a kind of very titillating newspaper.
A local tabloid filled with sex and gossip. Apple Daily was an instant hit in Hong Kong.
I remember back in 95, most newspaper in Hong Kong, they had an implicit agreement to sell at $5 per copy. So $5 Hong Kong. And on the launch day, we priced ourselves at $2, which is below cost. And everyone was so angry about it. But that was the intention. We were there to disrupt.
Simon Lee is a former writer at Apple Daily who worked at the paper for more than a decade.
Also, we gave everyone an apple. We asked the newspaper stands for whoever bought an Apple Daily just also gave away an apple. Most people forgot about what we talked about on the newspaper. I forgot about it. But people remember the apple.
Apple Daily had a serious agenda, but it was never highbrow. It was funny, the kind of paper that kids read under the dinner table. And like Jimmy Lai, it pushed boundaries.
There was not only one, but many, quite a few instances when our reporter went so far to really look into the trash outside the home of those celebrities to find out what they had, kind of trying to find out if there were like condoms and stuff like that, when they present to themselves as the virgin and these innocent teenagers, but then we found like condoms in their trash. So what does it tell you? They had safe sex? That was just one. And then the fans, of course, were furious. How can you go to invade other people's privacy like that?
Within the newsroom, journalists found in Jimmy Lai a generous and demanding boss, someone who paid his employees well, but also fired people for not speaking in meetings.
Some people might find the competition stressful, but some people just love it. I would say working at Apple Daily, the environment is more like a campus of Ivy League school. Like you have some of the best mentors, best competitors, you can also call them comrades, and also the best cafeteria.
Rival newspapers hated how Apple Daily undercut them on price. But Jimmy Lai was all about the market. If people were buying the paper, which they were, then he was doing the right thing. And the paper did have a greater purpose.
Our entertainment news are the bread and butter, but then the political news is what our spirit is.
Apple Daily became a place to learn not just about Hong Kong, but about China. It wrote the kind of stories about mainland China that would never get published there. This annoyed Beijing, of course, But in those days, Hong Kong was a place where you could speak your mind, even after 1997.
Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the handover ceremony for Hong Kong, held jointly by the Government of the United Kingdom and the Government of the People's Republic of China.
In 1997, Britain handed Hong Kong over to China.
Ceremonies and celebrations over. A century and a half of British rule in Hong Kong is simply history tonight. China is in charge now.
The arrangement between China and Hong Kong was called One Country, Two Systems. It was agreed it would last for 50 years. Hong Kong would be under Chinese sovereignty, but it would continue to maintain its own economic and social systems. It would remain a place of freedom and prosperity. It worked, but it was fragile, and every now and then, storm clouds would brew. The first time was in 2003, when Hong Kong tried to pass Article 23. Under the Constitution, it's the most controversial part of the Basic Law. It allows the Hong Kong government to enact laws that would prohibit, quote, any act of treason, secession, sedition, subversion. When Hong Kong's Legislative Council tried to pass it, it found itself at odds with many of its own citizens. Freedom's promise during the handover was suddenly under threat.
I was born in 1997 in Hong Kong. It was a very special year because it was the year when Hong Kong was returned from the British to the Chinese. But of course, during the entire process, no Hong Konger was at the table to talk about Hong Kong's future, right? We were never the ones to decide for ourselves.
This is Anna Kwok. She's the director of the Hong Kong Democracy Council and helped organise protests in the months leading up to Jimmy Lai's arrest.
That problem became clear to people in 2003 when the Article 23 was first introduced in Hong Kong. And of course, at that time, 500,000 Hong Kongers marched on the streets of Hong Kong to really express their dissent and disagreement with the government. I was only 6 years old at the time, but I was aware of what was happening because Hong Kong was full of these discussions about political affairs. It's only normal. You would go to a newspaper stand, you see, you know, Apple Daily, you see Ming Pao, you see a number of newspapers that would discuss political issues, social issues, without any concerns at all.
That first attempt to pass Article 23 failed. But the discontent of Hong Kongers who resisted integration with mainland China, the motherland, didn't disappear. There were more storm clouds in 2014, when Beijing brought reforms to the Hong Kong electoral system. Those reforms would allow China to vet candidates for the city's leader. Out of this came the Umbrella Movement. Students sat in Civic Square for 79 days, opening up their umbrellas to protect themselves from police tear gas. The protests died down, but not before activists left behind banners and posters saying, "We'll be back." In 2019, they were, and in much greater numbers.
Angry and afraid, the youth have mobilised. In the city's streets, thousands clash with police. Umbrellas and bottles versus shields and batons. Through clouds of tear gas, they push forward.
Come on!
Aim to breach Parliament, to stop an extradition bill they believe puts their freedoms at risk from China.
Sometimes violent, often peaceful.
Despite weekend downpours, it was the sea of umbrellas that flooded the streets of Hong Kong. Underneath, nearly 2 million Hong Kongers in a sweeping show of force for democracy in the Chinese territory.
Over a quarter of the 7 million people living in Hong Kong are believed to have taken to the streets, and Apple Daily was front and center the whole time.
The paper took a very assertive, very anti-government, pro-democracy role, really also leading.
This is Mark Clifford again.
Although he's very outspoken, he's actually, in many ways, quite a shy guy, certainly a very private guy, much happier with a small group of people. He's not out there talking to millions of people. I mean, he's very different than a Navalny or a Mandela. He's never sought political power for himself. He's really just sought democracy for the Hong Kong people.
Jimmy Lai might not have seen himself as Russia's Alexei Navalny or South Africa's Nelson Mandela, but where so many powerful people were silent or critical of the protests in Hong Kong, Jimmy Lai was not. During the 2014 protests, he went to see the demonstrators every day. There was a little bit of the patrician about him.
The student really excited us and gain our respect. And they still gain our respect because they're still very persistent. But it's very obvious now that people are tired. And this first battle is not the war. And they should realize it's about time we retreat and preserve our determination, our willpower, so we can come back again.
It didn't endear him to some of the younger, more radical protesters who wanted to see a complete break from China. But ignoring the consequences and the occasional pig organs thrown at him, Jimmy Lai continued to speak out for democracy. His son witnessed the repercussions firsthand.
He wasn't afraid to tell the truth. And throughout the years, our house has been firebombed. He's had death threats against him. In Taiwan, once someone skinned a dog and hanged it on our door.
Apple Daily was affected too. In the wake of the 2014 protests, it lost advertisers like HSBC and Standard Chartered, who said they pulled out of the paper on commercial grounds. But the newspaper, like Jimmy Lai, persisted. Apple Daily was pulling in a huge number of readers who saw it as the most outspoken pro-democracy paper in Hong Kong, going where others feared to tread. It reported critically about China and the Hong Kong government. It even printed inserts that could be used as protest signs.
Jimmy and Apple and Next Magazine became almost a de facto opposition political party. And I think this is something that the leaders up in Beijing saw and viewed with mounting alarm.
Not least because Jimmy Lai had powerful allies in the West.
China embraces liberty. And yet, for the last few years, Beijing has increased its interventions in Hong Kong and engaged in actions to curtail the rights and liberties of its people.
He met Mike Pence, Mike Pompeo, John Bolton, US politicians who were, and still are, strong critics of the Chinese government.
In my view, China is the existential threat in the 21st century.
Things were about to get more serious in Hong Kong too. By 2019, China had tightened its grip, and Jimmy Lai was no longer just facing the threat of lost advertisers or firebombs.
Now they just use every excuse to arrest people, just to intimidate. The message is very clear. Either you leave or you bend.
But he chose to stay until it was too late.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
That's a sort of freedom, like an intrinsic knowledge, like you are part ocean, ocean is part you. You have salt water in your body. You are part of this.
Oceans, life underwater. A new podcast all about the oceans and the mind-blowing life within them.
Subscribe now to Oceans, Life Underwater on your favorite podcast app.
We begin in Hong Kong today, where the high-profile trial of the former media tycoon and pro-democracy campaigner Jimmy Lai has, in the last few hours, got underway.
It's December 2023. The police van transporting Jimmy Lai pulls into Hong Kong's West Kowloon Court. Supporters, who've been queuing all night hoping for a seat in the public gallery, are outnumbered by police. Armed guards, sniffer dogs, and a bomb disposal van are at the ready. After 3.5 years of waiting, Jimmy Lai's trial is about to begin. It's the first time since 2021 that Jimmy Lai has been seen in public. Ushered into court through the back door, looking a little thinner than his last appearance, he smiles and waves at his family.
He's being charged under both sedition laws, so colonial era sedition laws in Hong Kong, and the national security law, which was brought in 2020. And really, he's been charged with three things. The first is a series of charges which relate just purely to his journalism.
Keelan Gallagher is a human rights lawyer. She's leading the international legal team for Jimmy Lai and for his son, Sebastian.
So it's alleged that articles that were published in Apple Daily were seditious and undermined national security for a range of reasons, because they were supportive of pro-democracy protesters, because they referred to Tiananmen Square, because they criticised Beijing's leaders. He's also got two sets of charges which relate to alleged collusion with foreign forces. And the evidence which we're now hearing in the trial is very much focused on those issues, those charges.
Jimmy Lai has pleaded not guilty. His case, which is likely to conclude in May, isn't being heard by a jury, but by three national security judges chosen by the Hong Kong government. The lead prosecutor has accused several foreign nationals of colluding with Jimmy Lai, acting as his agents or his intermediaries by receiving information for him, helping him, or working under his instructions. Those named include US political figures, financiers, human rights campaigners, and Benedict Rogers, the co-founder of the think tank Hong Kong Watch.
I've actually been named, as have a number of other foreigners, as collaborators, or in the case of two, been named as co-conspirators.
As evidence, the prosecution has presented Apple Daily News articles, adverts, and columns written by Jimmy Lai. They've also used his WhatsApp messages.
So on January the 2nd this year, having had an undisturbed Christmas and New Year, I woke up to find that the prosecution had presented a WhatsApp message from Jimmy to me that was from 2019, asking me if I could ask Chris Patten, the last governor of Hong Kong, to provide a comment to an Apple Daily journalist, a perfectly normal thing for a newspaper publisher to do. And this was somehow evidence of his criminal behaviour.
Other named collaborators claim to have never talked to Jimmy Lai. The witness Andy Lee says he's never met him either. The Washington Post investigated Lee's treatment in custody. Here's Mark Clifford again.
He escaped Hong Kong as a fugitive. He was a young activist in 2019, and he was captured in Chinese waters, held for many months. I believe it was 9 months in China. Reliable reports that he was subjected to torture in China. Was returned to Hong Kong, has been held in a psychiatric facility. Again, we believe that there are very serious questions about his treatment. I think it's the Hong Kong legal system that's really being put on trial more than Jimmy Lai. And I think it's being shown to be, well, to call it a kangaroo court, I think would be grossly unfair to kangaroos. It's a joke.
Jimmy Lai's trial is the first major case to be heard under the new national security law. It was passed in 2020, just a few weeks before Lai was arrested. The West views the law as a way of cracking down on freedom of speech and civil liberties.
Hong Kong and China are now essentially one and the same. The fiction of one country, two systems has long since vanished.
China and its appointed officials would disagree. Carrie Lam, the former Hong Kong chief executive, implemented the law.
Every country in the world needs national security legislation. So why should Hong Kong be an exception? Hong Kong is an inalienable part of the People's Republic of China. So I would say that to sort of jump into a conclusion that any such national security legislation is not going to be good, is going to take away Hong Kong's freedom, are totally unsubstantiated.
Unsubstantiated or not, hundreds of thousands of Hong Kongers have voted with their feet and moved abroad. A brain drain for a place that has long been one of the world's leading financial centres. Many have come to the UK under a visa scheme which offers a route to permanent residency. Others, like the activist Anna Kwok, have gone to the United States.
I even had a list of things and food that I was supposed to visit or eat, but did not get a chance during that time in Hong Kong, and thought, oh, the next time I came back, I should, you know, go eat these food or go visit these places. But it was only until about 1 or 2 years later that I realized that it was my last time going back home. And of course, I did not get to say the goodbyes that I would wish to, because I would wish to have properly farewelled a lot of the people I love and Hong Kong as well.
Beyond diplomatic relations with China, human rights concerns and press freedoms, Jimmy Lai's story matters because he's a British citizen. Here's his lawyer, Keelan Gallagher.
I'm afraid we had little more than radio silence from the UK government. For a long time, we'd no engagement from the UK government at all. So despite repeated requests for the Foreign Secretary to meet with Sebastian Lai, also a UK national, about his father, a UK national in prison in Hong Kong, we had stonewalling.
The government may have been slow to act, but eventually the Foreign Secretary, David Cameron, now Lord Cameron, met Sebastian Lai and his legal team in the run-up to the trial. David Cameron released a statement the night before the trial began. He urged Hong Kong authorities to repeal the national security law and to release Jimmy Lai. In response, China's ambassador to the UK said,
"We firmly oppose UK politicians' emboldening of Jimmy Lai, one of the most notorious anti-China elements bent on destabilising Hong Kong, and strongly condemn the UK side's egregious interference in the rule of law in the Hong Kong Special Administrative Region of China. Jimmy Lai was a major plotter and instigator of the anti-China riots in Hong Kong."
The UK Foreign Office told Tortoise that ministers have raised Jimmy Lai's case with the Chinese government on multiple occasions. Most recently, when the Foreign Secretary met with Foreign Minister Wang Yi in February. Jimmy Lai may have a British passport, but it's reasonable to ask, does China really care what Britain thinks?
The idea that Great Britain has a duty or standing to interfere or to tell China what to do is not something that's even entertained when you're talking in Beijing.
This is Aina Tangen, a senior fellow at the Taihe Institute based in Beijing.
They don't see that at all. They just see this as a territory that was taken back from an aggressive, racist entity that was stripping everything bare.
Alex Lowe, a columnist at the South China Morning Post, thinks along similar lines.
You profess to be a democracy. Hong Kong and China never make that professions. They run along authoritarian government logic. And they see group security and safety and prosperity as a priority. I think more specifically, what China does in Hong Kong, is it really your business? What you do in Scotland, is it my business? Or what Wales does, is it my business?
The Chinese embassy didn't respond to our request for comment. In March, nearly 27 years after the British handover, Article 23 was passed unanimously by Hong Kong's government. With Jimmy Lai behind bars and Apple Daily no more, in the end, from public consultation to final approval, it took less than 50 days to pass the law. Hong Kong Chief Executive John Lee described it as historic. Abroad, the reviews were less favourable.
They've arrested a lot of people under the national security law. It kind of leaves me wondering why they even need Article 23 except to say that they did it. It certainly means that it's a lot easier to, even easier to arrest people and that they have a wider range of penalties.
Suspects can now be detained without charge for 16 days. Previously, it was 48 hours. Police can prevent suspects from meeting lawyers and trials can take place behind closed doors. China has put in a lot of effort to contain and lock up Jimmy Lai. Keelan Gallagher herself says she's been threatened with criminal prosecution.
It's been made very clear to us that we can't travel to countries that may result in us either being kidnapped and brought to Hong Kong or China, or which have extradition arrangements with Hong Kong and China. China is now in a position where it's not only content with targeting its critics within China and Hong Kong within their own borders, it's not even content with only targeting its diaspora communities, so Hong Kongers abroad. It now is targeting literally anyone who stands up and attempts to speak truth to power or anyone who may, for example, be supporting someone who does that. I've had threats to my kids, I've had threats to my husband. I've had a whole series of very odd phantom WhatsApp calls, which come when I'm on my own with one other person. And the call looks as if it's coming from the person who's with me, but in fact, they're not ringing me at all. So it's unclear whether that's just a glitch in their surveillance or whether it's designed to send a message. But either way, it's very frightening.
Even where there's no direct link to Jimmy Lai, there are other powerful business figures, other rebels, other troublemakers for China to go after. And beyond Hong Kong, another territory which China sees as its own. Here's Benedict Rogers again.
The one country, two systems model that was created by Deng Xiaoping for Hong Kong was originally created ultimately with Taiwan in mind. I think his vision was show Taiwan that Hong Kong can be part of China, but have a high degree of autonomy, have its freedoms respected, and that the same could be applied to Taiwan. I think today Taiwan sees what's happened in Hong Kong and sees those promises completely destroyed. And thinks, well, no, thank you, because, you know, we'll end up in the same situation that Hong Kong has ended up in.
The question we asked at the start of the episode was this. Why did Jimmy Lai stay? His son, Sebastian, is probably the best person to answer.
Someone asked him, Jimmy, do you regret the last 30 years? Knowing that you being in jail for life could be a very real possibility. And Dad thinks about it for a second and he just says, lying down there in the holding cell with my jacket as a blanket, I had a lot of time to think about it. And I did think if I'd change anything in the last 30 years. And I've come to the conclusion that I wouldn't change a thing. By choosing to stay in Hong Kong, he inadvertently decided not to spend time with his family, right? I mean, now that he's in jail, right? I do think about it, and I think the answer is pretty simple. It's because it was the right thing to do.
In 2015, when he was Prime Minister, David Cameron talked about a golden era of economic relations with China. The same year, President Xi Jinping came to the UK on a state visit. He went to a traditional pub for fish and chips. He visited Manchester City, and even took a selfie with Sergio Aguero. Here was a Chinese leader who was at ease with the West, and vice versa. But since then, a lot has changed. Hong Kong's creeping authoritarianism, China's treatment of the Uyghurs, its spying on dissidents abroad, cyberhacking, and efforts to disrupt democratic elections. All this tells another story. We're less than 10 years from that golden era, but it feels like a world away. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Slow Newscast. If you enjoyed this episode, please do leave us a rating and review. It was written, reported, and produced by Xavier Greenwood and me, Imi Harper. The executive producer was Matt Russell. The sound designer was Sam.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
That's a sort of freedom, like an intrinsic knowledge, like you are part ocean, ocean is part you. You have salt water in your body. You are part of this.
Oceans. Life Underwater, a new podcast all about the oceans and the mind-blowing life within them.
Subscribe now to Oceans, Life Underwater on your favorite podcast app.
I'm Umbatha. The editor was Jasper Corbett.